The situation in Mathura had become quite difficult. There were many opponents to Krishna, friends of Kamsa. And the most powerful was Jarasandha, the king of Magadha, who had conquered many other kings, and so he had taken the title Chakravarti, emperor. And others like Shishupal were his vassals. They were his assistants, friends, allies. The Pandavas, Yudhishthira wanted to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. There's one story in the Mahabharata that, how's it go? Was it a dream? Anyway, he found out. Some sage was telling Yudhishthira about heaven. I don't know, maybe in Vyasadeva. And he wanted to know what kings have attained heaven. And he said, among all of your ancestors, only Harishchandra, famous king who was tested by the demigods. He had to fall down to the position of a chandala and serve in a crematorium. So Harishchandra was so glorified that he attained heaven. But among the other ancestors of Yudhishthira, he was informed that not even your father Pandu, he didn't go to heaven. And so Yudhishthira was very disappointed. Why can't my father, such a perfect man, why can't he attain entrance into heaven? Is there something we can do? I think he was asking Vyasadeva, if someone can correct me if I'm wrong. Is there anything I can do to help my father get into heaven? And Yudhishthira was informed, yes, if you perform the Rajasuya sacrifice, then your father Pandu will be allowed to enter heaven. So that's one reason that Yudhishthira wanted to perform this sacrifice. He also told Krishna, he was asking Krishna's advice, can I perform this? I don't want to do it for my own aggrandizement. And I don't want to unnecessarily cause any disruption or violence. But I think it would be a good idea to perform this great sacrifice. The Rajasuya is only performed by kings who can establish an uncontested rule. They have to defeat all their rivals and establish themselves as unrivaled emperor. And then that king can perform the Rajasuya sacrifice and guarantee himself and his forefathers a place in heaven. But that wasn't the motivation of Yudhishthira to become all-powerful on this earth or to attain heaven, although he did want to see that his father get entrance to heaven. But he told Krishna, really, what I think is the real good reason for doing this is that I want the people to see what can be accomplished by your devotees as in comparison to what the materialists achieve. So therefore, I want to show how your devotees are all successful. Therefore, let me perform, please, the Rajasuya sacrifice. So Krishna, he would never make a political decision without consulting with Uddhava. So he asked Uddhava his opinion. We're jumping into the middle of the 70th chapter here, but the younger princes of the Yadu dynasty, they were more concerned, Yudhishthira wants to do a sacrifice. I think Yudhishthira was visiting Dwarka here, and the younger Yadu princes said, before we talk about doing sacrifices, we have enemies to deal with. I'm sorry, this is not Dwarka, this is still Mathura. So, especially Jarasandha, the king of Magadha, we have to defeat him. He's attacked Mathura tried to destroy us and our city 17 times. Krishna and Balaram were able to defeat him and destroy his army every single time. But still, he's still around, he's still coming, he's still threatening us. We have to defeat him. So let us give attention to organizing our armies. We can go attack Magadha and be done with this Jarasandha. So Krishna asked Uddhava, what do you think? How do you think we should handle the situation? So we read here. Krishna tells Uddhava, the personality of Godhead said, you indeed are our best eye and closest friend, for you know perfectly the relative value of various kinds of counsel. Therefore, please tell us what should be done in this situation. We trust your judgment and shall do as you say. So Uddhava, as always, did what Krishna asked him to do. He's not thinking himself that he's superior to Krishna in any way, that he actually knows anything that Krishna doesn't know. He's fully aware that Krishna is omniscient and knows everything, past, present, and future. But Krishna asked him for advice, so he gives it. So, Uddhava suggested you should do both of these things. As the young princes are demanding, you should defeat Jarasandha, and as Yudhishthira is requesting, he should perform the Rajasiya sacrifice. Uddhava explains, anyway, before Yudhishthira can perform that sacrifice, he has to receive tribute, acknowledgement of his superiority from all the other kings. So therefore, the two go together. Jarasandha has to be put in his place first, otherwise the Rajasuya sacrifice can't be performed. Conquering Jarasandha will serve both purposes. By this decision, there will be great gain for us. Yudhishthira will have his kingdom secured. He'll get great pious credits. He'll go to heaven. We'll all go to heaven. And you, Krishna, our friend, you'll be glorified. We will never be able to defeat Jarasandha with our armies. He's able to muster the most powerful army on the earth. And he's done it, even though we destroyed that army completely, we decimated it. Although more than decimate. Decimate literally means that the army is reduced to 1/10 the size. Decimate. Decimal 10. Latin. So when 90% of the soldiers are killed, that's decimated. But Krishna and Balaram killed 100% of the soldiers. You know, I don't know what you call that in Latin. They did it 17 times. So 1700% decimated. But Jarasandha just goes back and builds another army. We'll never defeat him this way. The only way to defeat him is in single combat. And the only person who could ever possibly do that is Bhima. The only person who's as strong as Jarasandha. Now how are we going to arrange that? Well, Uddhava's using his intelligence to come up with the right ideas. We know, Uddhava says, that Jarasandha is fond of Brahminical culture. If a Brahmin approaches him, he'll give whatever the Brahmin asks. To protect his reputation, he's obliged to do that. Just like Karna, just like Bali Maharaj. Great kings, even though they may have been demoniac. Bali was a demon, although he wasn't demoniac. Karna was a noble person, but he was in demoniac association. And Jarasandha is just a plain demon. But they're very charitable. They won't refuse a Brahmin's request, no matter what it is. Even if it's not a real Brahmin. So Bhima has to go there in disguise as a Brahmin and beg charity. And then he'll beg for a fight. But Arjun wanted to go too. You know, Bhima can make a mistake. Sometimes he's foolhardy. So I'll go along with Bhima. And Krishna said, I'm going too. So the three of them, the idea was the three of them would go in disguise. And now they'll defeat Jarasandha. Then the Rajasuya sacrifice can be performed by Yudhishthir. That was Uddhava's suggestion. That Uddhava goes on to say to Krishna, even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva act only as your instruments in cosmic creation and annihilation, which are ultimately done by you, the Supreme Lord, in your invisible aspect of time. In their homes, the godly wives of the imprisoned kings, the kings that were captured by Jarasandha, you may say, well, he fought them fair and square in war. They're his prisoners. But he went beyond the rules of chivalrous combat. He kept them prisoner. Normally, some negotiation is done and the prisoners are, you know, there's a trade for the prisoner, some ransom is paid, and the kings who are imprisoned are let go. But in this case, he kept them prisoners with the intention of sacrificing them to Lord Bhutanath, Lord Shiva, as a human sacrifice. Thousands of kings. That's not chivalrous. That's demoniac. And Uddhava is saying, in their homes, the godly wives of the imprisoned kings sing of your noble deeds, about how you will kill their husband's enemy and deliver them. The gopis also sing your glories, how you killed the enemy of the elephant king Gajendra, the enemy of Sita, daughter of Janaka, and the enemies of your parents also. So also do the sages who have obtained your shelter glorify you, as do we ourselves. Of course, Krishna is not going to kill Jarasandha himself. Bhima is going to do it. But when the devotee is serving as Krishna's representative, Krishna is doubly glorified. Krishna's God, so obviously he can kill some little man, some demon. But when Krishna empowers his devotee to do the glorious deed, then that's more wonderful. Bhima parta vyajahvayena harina nilayam tadiyam. Many demons were killed by Krishna in person, and others, like Pralamba killed by Balaram, those who were killed by Arjuna, those who were killed by Bhima. Krishna used his devotees as his instruments to kill other demoniac persons. And here is Uddhava's suggestion that Krishna, by the agency of Bhima, dispose of Jarasandha. Sukadeva Goswami said, O King, Devarshi Narada, the Yadu elders, and Lord Krishna all welcomed Uddhava's proposal, which was entirely auspicious and infallible. Krishna can empower a devotee like Bhima to be more powerful than 10,000 elephants. Of course, there were various blessings from sages and demigods involved. But behind all of that is Krishna's mercy. All power, all capability comes from Krishna. When a devotee is glorious because of Krishna's glory. But there are various channels in which that mercy or that empowerment flows. Somebody may have Krishna's direct blessings. That's available to a few. Arjuna heard Bhagavad Gita from Krishna himself. How many people hear Bhagavad Gita directly from Krishna's mouth? Sanjaya, by the blessings of Vyasadeva, was able to. He was able to perceive in his heart the conversation on the Battle of Kurukshetra. Avyasa prachadat chutavan etad guyamaham param keshav arjaneo punyam sakshad katayatak swayam. By the grace of Vyas, I was able to personally witness by mental telepathy, whatever you call it, mental television, the conversation between Keshava and Arjuna. This is all auspicious conversation. So Sanjaya witnessed directly. On the battlefield, everybody saw Krishna and Arjuna on the chariot, but how many of them could have heard?
Yeah.
There weren't any loudspeaker systems. Yeah. No shortwave radio. Rather, you know, what do you call? Anyway, there's no means for everybody on the battlefield to hear the Bhagavad Gita. Maybe a few heard some of the words. So practically only Arjuna and Sanjaya, maybe some demigods, were able to hear what was going on. The rest of us, we know Bhagavad Gita as it was transmitted to the Parampara. Srila Vyasadeva arranged for it to be, he dictated it along with the rest of the Mahabharata. He inserted it into the Bhishma Parva of the Mahabharata. Ganesh wrote it down. And our acharyas have commented on the Bhagavad Gita, Shankaracharya. There are other commentaries even before Shankaracharya. And the Vaishnav acharyas have presented us Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada has given us Bhagavad Gita as it is. Hundreds of millions of people in the world, even today, know Bhagavad Gita. But of them, nobody on the earth today heard it directly from Krishna. That's rare. Usually, Krishna disseminates his mercy and the knowledge that he's giving us, his instructions, and the empowerment to accomplish great deeds, he usually gives it indirectly through his devotees. Rather than do things himself and give us instructions in person or deliver his mercy in person, he usually does it through his representatives. The pure devotees, the demigods, the sages, and the Brahmins in general, they're Krishna's representatives. We get Krishna's mercy. We get Krishna's instructions, the instructions of the Vedas. And we get our empowerment to do things in Krishna's service through these representatives. Therefore, Vedic culture is established on the basis of respect for the demigods, the sages, the Vedas, the Brahmins. That it's a culture of respect, as opposed to the modern demoniac civilization of do your own thing and don't have any respect for anybody. Because we have respect for Krishna's representatives, we receive Krishna's blessings and all empowerment. Bhima is one case, empowered with all strength, more powerful than 10,000 elephants, able to defeat anybody, human, rakshasa, demigod, anybody. And on the other hand, Uddhava, not a fighter, maybe a kshatriya by birth, but he's not a warrior. But Krishna empowered him with knowledge, with the power to serve as acharya and teach that knowledge, and the power to associate with Krishna's most intimate devotees and to be Krishna's messenger to the gopis, and now also to be Krishna's personal advisor. This is all by Krishna's empowerment. So because Krishna requested him, therefore Uddhava gives advice, and he understands, if I'm able to say anything intelligent, to give any good judgment, it's only because Krishna is allowing me to do this. A devotee doesn't have to become egoistic because he has some capacity. He understands Krishna gave me this ability, and therefore all I can do is offer it back to Krishna. Okay, any comments or questions?
I had a question.
Yeah, please.
In the introduction you said Yudhishthira Maharaj was upset that his father couldn't go to the heavens.
Yes.
Now, he being a devotee, why would he aspire for that instead of a spiritual goal?
And that's the way it's related in Mahabharata. So, it appears sometimes that in the Mahabharata that the motivation of the Pandavas is to go to heaven. You don't hear about Vaikuntha in the Mahabharata. It's all swarga, swarga. Arjuna goes to heaven. At the end, they ascend to heaven. So, but that's, the bias there is really the bias of the readers. Now, the readers are interested in heaven. Okay, so Vyasadeva presents a heaven-bound Mahabharata, in which the Pandavas themselves seem to be primarily interested in going to heaven. We have to see through that. You know, it's just a materialist looks at a devotee, he just sees material motives in the devotee. He can't understand that a human being could have higher motives than everybody else. You know, everybody wants to go to heaven, or everybody wants to enjoy in this world and be powerful. How can somebody not want be like that? So because nobody can even imagine that a person could have a higher goal than attaining heaven, it's not described by Vyasadeva and Vaishampayana in the Mahabharata. And so it seems like Yudhishthira is being enticed by the idea of my father has to go to heaven, you know, otherwise this is disrespectful. But maybe there's more to it than that. You know, we're told that much. We're not told the whole story of what Yudhishthira's motive was. And we hear more in the Bhagavatam how Yudhishthira tells Krishna. He doesn't tell, we don't hear in the Bhagavatam Yudhishthira repeating this idea that, you know, I got to get my father into heaven. He tells him, I want the world to see what a devotee can accomplish. So it's different, you know, it appears to be different. Not that it's actually contradictory. It's just we're seeing different pieces of the story. You know, we're getting partial information in the Mahabharata. If Yudhishthira may have had that, you know, may have actually gone on. Vyasadeva told him about this, and he's thinking how to save his father. But he actually, his deeper motivation was as described in the Bhagavatam. In general, if you ever find any apparent contradiction between the presentation of the Mahabharata and the Bhagavatam, there's always some explanation, but we may not know the explanation. In the case where we're left with an apparent contradiction, then we should take the version of the Bhagavatam. And then someday we'll figure out what the reconciliation is. We read in the Mahabharata, in the beginning, how when he was cursed to be bitten by the snake, Parikshit Maharaj tried to save himself. He built a fortress, a moat around his palace, you know, and hid out in the palace. You know, this Takshika won't get me. But that's contrary to what we read in the Bhagavatam, that he prepared to leave his body, not that he tried to save himself. So, only explanation that I could give is that this is not the same prediction, that this is occurring in a different kalpa, this is somebody else. And that the story, the narration of Pariksit that's given to Mahabharata is not the same, probably not even during the same day of Brahma. Our Pariksit doesn't behave like that, try to save himself from the curse of Sringi. So anyway, there's various ways to reconcile. Sanatana Goswami proposes that there are other Mahabharatas. We don't have them. And that this Jaimini, Sanatana Goswami tells us that the Jaimini Mahabharata is more devotional. The one that Vyasadeva, that was retold by Jaimini rather than Vaishampayana. In that, devotional service to Krishna, pure devotional service to Krishna is highlighted. And I don't think you'll find it in that Mahabharata glorification so much of going to heaven. At least in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, which Sanatana Goswami presents to us as the appendix to that Jaimini Mahabharata, heaven is not at all the final goal. Narada Muni visits heaven, but he just passing through on his way to higher regions. The same thing with Gopu Kumar. He goes to heaven, he meets Lord Indra, he actually becomes Lord Indra himself when the post is left vacant. And he meets Lord Vamanadeva, who resides on the heavenly planets. He worships him. But he doesn't stay there. He moves on. He's not satisfied. He goes on to Lord Brahma's planet, to Lord Shiva's planet. He leaves that, the material world, and goes to Vaikuntha. And eventually he's only satisfied when he reaches Goloka Vrindavan. So the supremacy of heaven, of Swargaloka, is not presented in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. It's not presented in Jaimini's version. The same Vedas, Vedic literature in general, the Vedas are desire tree. They give a person whatever he wants. A person who has an inferior desire, an inferior viewpoint, outlook on the world, an inferior set of values, he's satisfied with something material, then the Vedas will present something material to him. Trigunya Vishaya Veda, Krishna tells Arjuna. The Vedas are concerned with the three modes of material nature. Nishtrigunya Bhavarjuna. So you, Arjuna, you should be beyond those three modes. So is Krishna telling Arjuna, forget the Vedas? Yeah. Not really. That's the materialistic way of looking at the Vedas, Karmakanda viewpoint. But Krishna doesn't reject the Vedas. Later on he says that I'm going to tell you about Vedanta philosophy, about the nature of the soul and the body, the kshetra and the kshetragya. But I'm not telling you a philosophy I made up myself. This is based on the what was been taught by standard previous authorities. Rishibir Mahuda Gitam Chandobi Vividai Pritak Brahma Sutra Padais Chaiva Hetu Madbir Vinishchitai. Krishna tells Arjuna, what I'm going to tell you, this philosophical explanation of the nature of the soul and the body, this has been described by many great sages, Vedic sages, rishis, Bahuda, and they've described it in various different ways, from different viewpoints. Chando bi vividai, in various Vedic mantras, chandas. Pritak, very different ways. And in the Brahma Sutras, Vedanta Sutra, compiled by Vyasadeva, this is systematically analyzed. The nature of the body, the nature of the soul, and the Supreme Soul. So Krishna mentions Chando and the rishis, Vedic rishis and the Vedic mantras. So if Krishna is telling Arjuna, forget the Vedas, why is he appealing to the Vedas as standard authority? And in the end of the 17th chapter, Krishna says, Om Tat Sat Iti Nirdesho, Brahmanastena Vedascha Yagyascha Vihitapura. In ancient times, by chanting Om Tat Sat, the Brahmanas performed the sacrifices on the authority of the Vedas. So Krishna does accept, he relies on Vedas as the highest standard authority for all spiritual knowledge. He's not rejecting, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's not rejecting the Vedas, but he's rejecting the material understanding of the Vedas, Karmakanda understanding. So the same thing. We may read the Mahabharata with materialistic eyes, and it looks like, Yudhishthira just wants to go to heaven and wants to get his father to heaven. But that's our twisted vision. We don't, if we saw things more clearly, we'd understand the whole picture. Okay. Yeah. Yes, ma'am. Yes. Vaishampayana narrated. Vyasadeva was original speaker of the Mahabharata. He had several students. So Vaishampayana spoke Mahabharata to Janamejaya in 125,000 verses. That's the Mahabharata we have. Jaimini spoke Mahabharata also to the same Janamejaya at a different time. Shukadeva Goswami, another disciple of Vyas, spoke Mahabharata in 6 million verses to the Gandharvas on Gandharva Loka. And there are other versions of Mahabharata also, but we don't have them. They're all mentioned in the Mahabharata. Okay. And it's mentioned in the text of Brihad Bhagavatamrita that the Jaimini Mahabharata is more devotional than Vaishampayana's. Maybe someday it may turn up. Somebody may discover a manuscript someplace. It hasn't shown up yet. I don't think there's any manuscript of anything that pretends to be the Jaimini Mahabharata. I never heard of it. But it could be sitting in some dusty library somewhere. Okay. So we can look at Bhagavatamrita. Also, some description of Uddhava giving instructions to Krishna from Brihad Bhagavatamrita. But in this context, we were reading before from chapter 6 of the first part of Brihadbhagavatamrita, how Krishna, the day that he didn't get up out of bed, he was worried about the Vrijvasis. How are they going to survive? I can't go back to them. But if I don't go back, then they're in trouble. So what shall I do? Did we get to that point? No, we didn't read the whole chapter. We left Krishna still in bed, and everybody was talking about, Narada was talking to Uddhava. But they did wake Krishna up eventually, or he got up.
Krishna woke, heard them talking. He wasn't really asleep. He was hiding under his sheets, but he wasn't asleep. He just didn't want to talk to anybody. But when he heard them discussing, it was Narada's fault. They were all trying to not upset Krishna by saying anything about the Vrijvasis, but Narada wanted to hear about them. And Krishna heard, so he jumped out of bed. And in great distress, he approached Uddhava, "What can we do? What should I do? What do you suggest?" So we're reading from that point.
Bratar Uddhava Sarvagya Preshta Shreshta Vadadrutam Karavani Kimit Yasmat Choka Abdir Mam Sumudhara. O brother Uddhava, you know everything, and you are my best of dear friends. Please tell me at once what I should do. Please lift me from this ocean of distress. Shri Parikshiruvacha, we skip a few verses here. Tatcha Shri Bhagavan Kritva Shrutamapya Shrutam Yata Ajanan Iva Paprachcha Shoka Vedadato Davam. Well, in between the verses I skipped, Padmavati had some comment to make. It was completely irrelevant. Some insulting thing about the Vrijvasis. She's Kamsa's mother, wife of Ugrasen, because her illegitimate son. And then everybody ignored what she said. And then we return to this verse. Shri Parikshit said, although the personality of Godhead must have heard these words, the words spoken by Padmavati, he pretended that he had not heard them. Driven by sorrow, he then inquired from Uddhava, as though ignorant. Commentary. Not holding Padmavati's suggestions in high esteem, Krishna chose to ignore them. He knew very well what was required of him and what the Vrijvasis wanted. But because of sharing the distress of his devotees, he seemed unaware of these things. He responded to his own discomfort by asking for Uddhava's advice. So, anyway, can't tell what Krishna's really thinking. Not an easy person to analyze. But apparently, he's in a desperate situation. He's actually depending on Uddhava to deliver him from this confusion. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Bo vidvadvara tatratya tilabi praya vidbhovan tesham abhishtam kim tanme katayat vabilambitam. The Supreme Lord said, O best of learned scholars, you know all the thoughts of the residents of Vraja. Please tell me without delay what it is they desire. Commentary. This inquiry stems from Mother Devaki's proposal to offer the Vrijvasis whatever they want. That was, this is also a previous discussion we haven't read. that was Devaki's suggestion. Krishna tried that before. When Krishna had gone with his father and the elder Gopas to Mathura to pay taxes and attend the Dhanur Yajna, Krishna sent Nanda Maharaj and the elders back, and he gave them, after killing Kamsa, he gave them some of the booty, jewelry and other treasures from Kamsa's treasury, and sent them back to Vrindavan as gifts.
along with the promise, I'm coming home very soon. So that was an attempt maybe to bribe the Vrijabhasis by sending them gifts. But here it said Krishna understands, and so it's being suggested maybe to do that, something like that again. But Krishna understands that no presentation of gifts will placate the devotees in Vraja, since all they want from him is that he grace them with his presence. By approaching Uddhava for counsel, however, Krishna is able to free himself of the responsibility for the decision. This is a little tricky on Krishna's part. If Krishna decides to leave Mathura, he's in trouble. Dwarka is a Dwarka. If he decides on his own to leave Dwarka, the Dwarkavasis won't forgive him. If he decides on his own not to go back to Vrindavan, that's a cause of trouble too. Therefore, he's dumping the decision on Uddhava. Let him make the decision. Then Krishna won't get in trouble. If Uddhava advises him to go to Vrindavan, no one will be able to stop him. What first drove Krishna to inquire from Uddhava was anxiety. But now a second reason for taking his opinion has come to Krishna's mind. Sri Parikshit uvacha, tat chut va bhagavad vakyam Uddhava vidhi dukkitaha kshanam nishvasya vismera sanutapam jagadatam. Sri Parikshit said, having heard these words from the Lord, the despondent Uddhava was taken aback. He sighed briefly and then answered, full of remorse. Commentary. In the extreme ecstasy of prema, this state of affairs evoked, Uddhava's discrimination failed him. This is not good. Uddhava's, you know, the reason why we're asking his advice because he's supposed to be so discriminating. But in this case, he lost his intelligence. Not recognizing the intended meaning of Krishna's statement that Krishna wanted to visit Vraja, Uddhava instead took Krishna's words at face value and thought that Krishna wanted to placate his devotees with gifts. Thus Uddhava thought that Krishna, although all-knowing and supremely merciful, wanted to continue deceiving the Vrijabhasis. Uddhava was discouraged to see Krishna behaving like this with his loving devotees. Srimad Uddhava uvacha naraja rajeshwarata vibhutir na divya vastuni jate bhavattaha na kamayante nyad apiha kinchit amutra cha prapyam rite bhavantam. Sriman Uddhava said, the people of Vraja don't want from you the power and wealth of emperors, nor the enjoyments found in heaven, nor anything else obtainable in this world or the next. They desire nothing else but you. Avadana prasadutra priyatam gyapayami yat paschad vicharya kartavyam swayam eva yatochitam. Kindly favor me with your attention. Think over what I'm about to say, and then act as you see fit. This is the position of an advisor. Uddhava is not a Brahmin, but he's taking a brahminical position of an autonomous counselor. If someone's servile and docile, he'll just be a yes man and tell the superior whatever the superior wants to hear. But a useful advisor can speak his own mind. But that requires brahminical autonomy. He can't be a sold out, bought man. He has to be acting, no strings attached. He has to be free to speak the truth as he understands. That's the autonomy a Brahmin has to have. Otherwise, he's not an advisor, he's just a stooge. At the same time, the king takes the ultimate responsibility. He should listen to his advisors. They should speak freely, and he should take seriously their advice. But he's the administrator, the king. He makes the final decision. no matter what the advisors say. The bottom line is he has to take the responsibility. So like that, Uddhava is telling Krishna, please listen to me, I have something to say. Think about it, and then you decide. That's the actual protocol. The king makes the decision. Okay, so Uddhava says, Purvam nandasya sangatya bhavata preshitani te bhushanadini drishtvochur mito magna shugam buddhao. Before, when I met Narada, the cowherd saw the jewels and other gifts you had sent with me. Those cowherds, this was back when Krishna from Mathura, when he first went to Mathura, sent Nanda Maharaj back with the jewels and other gifts. Those cowherds then spoke with one another, all of them immersed in an ocean of grief. Okay, this is explained in the commentary. The event Uddhava is narrating occurred just after Krishna killed Kamsa. The jewelry Krishna sent was meant mainly for the women of Vraja, for the elder gopis headed by Mother Yashoda, and the younger gopis headed by Sri Radhika. Uddhava, however, does not here disclose this confidential fact. Next verse. Aho bata mahat kashtam vayam etad abhipsavaha etad prasada yogyascha gyata krishnena samprati. Oh, how very painful. Krishna now thinks that we want such presents from him and that we deserve this kind of mercy. Tadasma jivanam dig tishtet kante dunapi yat nanda gopamscha dig ye tam chakvaitanyupanayan. Therefore, damn our lives and the breath that still moves in our throat, and damn Nanda and the cowherd men. They should have left these things behind and instead brought Krishna himself. Tatas twad gamanasham cha hitva sahayashodaya mitapraya bhavan matra rebide nashanam mahat. Thus the residents of Vraja, including your mother Yashoda, have given up all hope of your return. She and the others are nearly dead, and now they refuse to eat at all. Oh. Commentary. Along with Yashoda, the Vrajavasis have begun to fast till death, refusing to touch even water. Interesting. We read this just the other day, 2 days before, when Uddhava went to Vrindavan, he saw a different picture. Yogamaya covered over the Viraha Bhava, and he saw a glimpse of the eternal pastime in which everyone's happy. And that's how he met Nanda and Yashoda. They were in distress, but they were able to talk and they were functioning. But Uddhava is telling Krishna that he saw something else. This is a different viewpoint, that they're all on the verge of death and refusing to even drink water. Okay, kritapa, this is just the complexity of the devotional activities. We can't analyze them by linear logic. Things are not what they seem to be on the surface. Kritaparada vannando vaktum kinshid dinatrayam ashakto tyantashok arto raja pranan avangatan bhavatas tatrayanuktim grahayan shapatot karahi darshayan yukti chaturiyam amun evamasantvayat. Nanda felt like someone who had committed a great offense because he came back from Mathura without Krishna. And for 3 days, he was so utterly miserable, he couldn't say a thing. But then, to save the lives of the residents of Vraja, he induced those people to believe your departing words. With many ardent promises, Nanda skillfully used logic to prove your words true. In this way, he placated the Vrajavasis. So this is some explanation that for 3 days, it looked like everyone was going to die. But Nanda Maharaj rose to the occasion, did the necessary. He's the responsible man. He's the king. So he got his wits together and tried to convince the Vrajavasis to stay alive, at least, and wait for Krishna to come back. Commentary. To assure Krishna that his devotees in Vraja were still holding on to life, Uddhava describes in these verses how Nanda Maharaj, knowing that his responsibility was to encourage the others, pulled himself out of depression and reminded the Vrajavasis of Krishna's promise to return. Soon after killing Kamsa, Krishna had sent Nanda home from Mathura with this assurance. Yata yuyam vrajam tata vayam cha sneha dukkitan bhyatin vo drashtum eshyamo vidaya sudhidam sukam. Now, dear father, this is from Bhagavatam 45th chapter, spoken by Krishna. Now, dear father, you should all return to Vraja. We shall come to see you. Our dear relatives who suffer in separation from us, as soon as we have given some happiness to your well-wishing friends. Nanda used the best arguments he could to devise to persuade the Vrajavasis that Krishna still intended to keep his word. Next verse. Sri Nanda Uvacha Dravyan Adhau Prema Chiknani Putra Etanyatra Prahinot Satyavakyaha Shigram Paschat Agamishyat Yavashyam Tatratyam Swaprastutartam Samapya. Srinanda said, our son is an honest person who always speaks the truth. He has first sent us these things as tokens of his love. He is sure to come back to us quickly as soon as he finishes what he has to do in Mathura. Shrutva te tatra vishvasya sarve saralamanasaha bhavat pritim samalochya langaran darur atmasu. The residents of Vraja, all simple-hearted people, trusted Nanda's words. Thinking about your loving affection, they accepted the jewelry and put it on their bodies. Shri Krishna trasamagatya prasada dravya sangrahat vikshyagya palakan asman nitaram kripa yishyati. They thought, when Krishna returns, he will see how we have followed his order by accepting these remnants of his enjoyment. Then he will show us special mercy. So they put on the jewelry, and I thought that would please Krishna. Bhavan swayamagatva tu yam sandesham samarpyamaham prahinot tena te sarve babuvar nihita eva. So Uddhava says, but you never came. You sent me instead. And when they heard the message you had sent with me, they almost died from disappointment. Again, this is a different picture than what we read in the Bhagavatam. Purport. Uddhava complains that although the Vraja devotees acted with simple honesty, Krishna reciprocated in a completely contrary way. To send through Uddhava a message telling the Vrajavasis to be satisfied with meditating on him as the all-pervading Supersoul was nothing less than a cruel deception. In the message Uddhava read, Krishna had said, you are never actually separated from me, for I am the soul of all creation. Just as the elements of nature, earth, air, fire, water, and earth are present in every created thing,
So I am present within everyone's mind, life air, intelligence, and senses, and also within the physical elements and the modes of material nature. That is what Krishna said. That's recorded. Yes? Yeah, 10:47:29. We've read it before. It's in the pink book. As I say, whatever you say may be held against you in a court of law. Yeah. It's said and recorded. Krishna can't get out of the deny that he said that. Although there is other explanations given of it. This message from Krishna shattered the Vrajvasi's hope of his ever returning. Uddhava continues. Tata drishtya maya tatra bhavato gamanam dhruvam pratigyaya prayatnatan jivayitva samagatam. Seeing them so despondent, I made every effort to keep them alive by promising you would surely come back. Then I returned here. Tat praptaye tasanyasta samasta vishayashrayaha prapur yadrigavastam te tam prichaitam nijagrajam. To attain you, these devotees then renounced, that's the devotees of Vraja, then renounced all enjoyment of the senses and all material shelter. Please ask your elder brother here, Balaram, hear what state they are in, because Balaram later was sent to Vrindavan, or went to Vrindavan to visit. He saw how the Vrajvasis were falling deeper and deeper into the desperation of Viraya Bhava when he came several months later. Commentary. After all this, Krishna only sent Balaram instead of going to Vraja himself. Uddhava is loath to describe the effects on the Vrajvasis of Krishna's failure to visit them again, because hearing it will be too painful for Krishna himself and everyone else present. After Uddhava's visit to Vraja, the residents totally gave up gratifying their senses and abandoned their homes to wander in the forests. While describing Lord Balaram's trip to Gokula, the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam says, Krishne Kamalapatrakshe Sanyast Akila Radasaha. The Vrajvasis renounced all material possessions for the sake of the lotus-eyed Krishna. So the explanation here is that means they actually left home and were wandering around in the wilderness. When Uddhava had come to Vrindavan earlier, he had seen the gopis headed by Sri Radhika in a different state, happy and decorated with fine jewelry, the same ornaments that Nanda had brought back from Mathura. The 10th canto, chapter 46, describes what Uddhava saw upon arriving in Vraja. Ta deepa deeptayar mani bi videju rajur vikarshad buja kankanas rajaha chalanditam vastanahara kundala twishat kapolaruna kunkumananaha. Pulling on the churning rods with bangled arms, the women of Raja shone with the splendor of their jewels, which reflected the light of the lamps. Their hips, breasts, and necklaces moved about, and their faces, anointed with reddish kumkuma, glowed radiantly, the luster of their earrings reflecting from their cheeks. As the ladies of Vraja loudly sang the glories of lotus-eyed Krishna, their songs, blended with the sound of the churning, ascended to the sky and did away with all inauspiciousness in every direction. So that was an apparently joyful scene that Uddhava had previously seen. But after Uddhava returned, having promised them that Krishna is coming, and when Krishna didn't come, then the Vrajvasis lost all hope. And that
more pitiful condition that they were in later was what was witnessed by Balaram, according to this commentary. Upon hearing Uddhava's message, however, the moods of the Vraja residents changed. Their hope for Krishna's return was destroyed, and they became more unhappy than before Nanda had consoled them. Uddhava suggests that Krishna can ask Balaram about the current state of the Vrajvasis, which Balaram saw with his own eyes. Even if you doubt my words, Uddhava implies, surely you will believe your own elder brother. Shri Pariksit Uvacha Tadvicheda Mahadukha Shankaya Mlapitani Saha Devaki Bhishma Jadhinam Mukhani Avanatanyadaha Kshadat Asrani Sasneham Vilokya Mirulashayaha Masi Karparapatrani Vyagro Yahachata Sangbhyaya. Shri Pariksit continued, from dread of the great pain of separation from Krishna, the faces of ladies like Devaki and Rukmini were pale, downcast, and full of tears. Looking at these women affectionately, gentle-hearted Krishna quickly gestured for an ink pot and paper. Commentary. Krishna was so shaken by Uddhava's statement that he was unable to speak. He could make known his desire for pen and paper only by gesturing. But if Krishna was so anxious about the Vrajvasis, why did he not go to Vrindavan at once? Because Krishna is soft-hearted. Incapable of making his devotees suffer, he was reluctant to leave Mother Devaki and his other beloved devotees who were in Dwarka. Prastutartam samadaya tatriyatyan ashvasya bandavan eshoham agata praya iti janita mat priyaha evam ashvasanam prema patram preshayitum vraje swahastin aiva likitam tacha garda pratitaye. Krishna meant to strengthen the faith of his Vraja devotees by sending them a letter filled with loving sentiments and written by his own hand. My dear friends, please know that as soon as I settle the duties before me and satisfy my relatives here, I will return in no time. I will be there. That was the letter Krishna was intending to write. Tasyehi tam. Now Uddhava's acting as Krishna's best well-wisher here, giving him some good advice. Tasyehi tam abhipretya prapto chyantartim udavaha vajavasi manobigyo abravit sashapatam rudan. Uddhava surmised what Krishna was about to do and was therefore greatly distressed. Knowing the inner hearts of the Vrajavasis, he cried and begged Krishna to reconsider his plans. Shrimad Uddhava Uvacha Prabho Sunirnitamidam Pratihi Twadiya Padabja Yugasya Tatra Shubha Prayanam Na Vinasya Jived Vrajakatanshid nachakinshidit chet. Sriman Uddhava said, O Master, please turn your attention to this. Unless your two lotus feet make a blessed journey to Vraja, there is no way to assure that your people of Vraja will survive. Those people want nothing but your lotus feet. Shri Pariksit Uvacha Pumati Kamsamataha Sahasam Dunvati Shidaha Hum Hum Devaki Nirbudhe Bhutam Bhutam Mayaduna. Shri Pariksit said,
The befuddled mother of Kamsa laughed at this, shook her head, and burst out, "Aha! Aha, foolish Devaki, now I understand. I understand everything." Commentary. Padmavati laughed to belittle Uddhava's words and uttered hum, hum, to show that she was thinking deeply and was unhappy. Chidam gorasadhanena yantritasyodavasyate sahayat tvatsutam gopa nayayitva punarvraje vane. With the help of your Uddhava, whom the cowherds have long controlled by gifts of milk goods, those cowherds want to bring Krishna back to the forest. Bishane durgame dushta sattva juste sakantake samrakshayatumichanti durta pashuganan nijan. In that dangerous forest, hard to travel and full of thorns and vicious beasts, those good-for-nothings want to make him tend their cows. Commentary. It is true that Uddhava had stayed in Vrindavan much longer than needed to deliver Krishna's messages, as confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam, 47th chapter of the 10th canto. Uddhava stayed there for several months, dispelling the gopis' sorrow by chanting the topics of Lord Krishna's pastimes. Thus he brought joy to all the people of Gokula. Padmavati here accuses Nanda and the other Vrajvasis of enticing Uddhava to prolong his stay by filling him with buttermilk and other milk products. She calls the Vrajvasis scoundrels for wanting to use someone else's son for dangerous work in a forest full of tigers, lions, and other wild animals. Anyway, these are the all-attractive dealings of Krishna with his loving devotees. This is the real substance of spiritual life. And the yogis and the karma mishra, jnana mishra bhaktas, they're not fortunate enough to be able to know these confidential mysteries. Supreme Personality of Godhead is the controller of everything. Bhoktaram and the, what is it? Bhoktaram yoga tapasam sarva loka maheshwaram suvidam sarva bhutanam. He's the proprietor of everything, and therefore everyone is working for his enjoyment because he owns everything. And he's the lord and master of all the worlds. But he's also everybody's well-wishing friend. And so those conditioned souls who, by the misuse of their free will, leave the spiritual world to come to this world of ignorance, Krishna wants to reclaim them. But because we voluntarily rejected him, he does not want to force us to come back to him. The whole idea is that love must be voluntary, cannot be forced. We're programmed to do what Krishna wants, so that's not love. That's just the operation of a machine. But autonomy and free choice means the capacity to make the wrong choice. So Krishna will not ever force us to surrender to him. He will not interfere with our material life. Not directly. But the way he extends his mercy is through the agency of his representatives. He won't interfere directly, but his devotees will interfere in our lives. So these Vedic agencies, the demigods, the sages, the demigods who give us the necessities of life and rule this universe, the controllers of the universe, the sages who give us the Vedic knowledge by which we know how to live a civilized life, and our teachers, the Brahmins, the kings who protect us, they're all Krishna's representatives. Krishna acts through them. But it's through the pure Vaishnavas that Krishna gives the real goal of life, pure devotional service. He comes to this world himself in his avatars. Because if God did not appear in this world in person,
nobody could have a real idea of what the Supreme is. Even the greatest thinkers could only speculate about God. And they do that. In the philosophy departments of the universities, they speculate about the Absolute Truth. Without appealing to Shastra, without having any realization, they just speculate. And they say so many things, maybe one thing out of 1,000 has some validity to it, most of it's just nonsense. Speculation. If God did not come to this world to show himself, we could only speculate about what he is. But he does come. He performs his pastimes, he exhibits himself, and he brings his devotees here with him. If he came here by himself, we would get, you know, a very limited picture of God. To see what God is, we have to see God together with his devotees. So Krishna incarnates. It's a horrible word. Incarnate means meat. You know, et incarnatus means God took a body made out of meat. You know, flesh body. You know, Krishna never takes a flesh body. But anyway, Prabhupada used the word incarnate. It's the common word. It's what we have in English. Sanskrit word is avatarati, that he descends. That's a decent way of expressing it. Not that he became a piece of meat. Yeah. But anyway, the word is there in English. Krishna has his incarnations. And in his incarnations, he always has some devotees with him. Even the fish incarnation, Lord Matsya, has his Satyavrata Muni. There's a loving reciprocation there. What to speak of Krishna? He has his countless devotees in all different rasas. And the greatest of those devotees have the power to transform the lives of the conditioned souls just by their personal examples. A person like Uddhava, by reading about him from the Shastra, from the Srimad Bhagavatam, we learn what is devotional service in separation, what it means to become a Raganuga Bhakta. The Ragatmaka Bhaktas are the eternal associates of the Lord in Vraj. Raganuga Bhaktas are those who follow in their footsteps. So Uddhava is the perfect example of the Raganuga Bhakta. And that is the mode of devotional service taught by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yeah. Raganuga, but not to pretend to be Nanda Maharaj, but to follow in the footsteps of such great devotees. To learn, just to meditate on them, and to serve them through the parampara. Yes, we're practicing Vaidhi Bhakti, and we're preaching. But we're doing our Vaidhi Bhakti, what are we preaching? We're preaching pure Krishna consciousness, hopefully. It's nice to spread this message all over the world, but make sure that we're spreading the pure message, not something else. Otherwise, what's the use of spreading it? And the message that we're supposed to be spreading is the message, the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is this pure Krishna consciousness, especially the Krishna consciousness that's in the mood, that's following in the footsteps of the eternal residence of Vraja. That is what Uddhava learned and what he taught. So therefore, there's some relevance, I think, in reading from Srimad Bhagavatam and those Shastras like the Brihad Bhagavatamrita that are based on the Bhagavatam. The glories of the devotional service of such a great devotee. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Could I just comment something on the nature of relationship between devotees who are in different Prabhambhava? What is the nature of dealing with each other?
Who are in different Bhavas?
If they're in the Prabhambhava, if they have this mood of separation, what is the nature of the exchange between each other?
You mean devotees in different rasas? No.
No, I'm thinking mainly in terms of the gopis.
Yes.
Is there any interaction between them?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. I'm not familiar with that. We can look maybe what we know more, have more information about is, say, how the devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu associate with one another. Mm-hmm. It's not that they're all walking around in a daze, you know, not talking to each other. For the associates of Mahaprabhu and those who are coming in the later generations, the association of the Gaur Bhaktas is prized. So Narottam Das Thakur, he wasn't interested in anything but Krishna. He had no material interest. But then he writes in his song, you know, Ramachandra Sangha Magi Narottam Das. I want the association of my friend Ramachandra Kaviraj. Why? Just because they were some friends? That's a material attitude, some sentimental friendship. No, it was not. This is the transcendental associate reciprocation between the devotees who are sharing this Viraha Bhava. That being able to have each other's association is what keeps them alive, or what gives them pleasure. Especially when Krishna is not here before us, and you know, at least we can't see him, then to have the association of Krishna's devotees is the most valuable thing in life. So I think if you want to see how the devotees in separations deal with one another, you can just read, open up any page of Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's full of case histories of how those devotees deal with one another, how they reciprocate. It's a very, you know, intense, complex life of devotional reciprocation. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his pleasure is to come down to the earth and be with his bhaktas, his hundreds of devotees, thousands and millions of devotees, and share their interrelations. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Goshtanandi. He likes to be with his devotees and just have some simple reciprocation with them. He becomes a human being. Yeah. Krishna comes to the earth, but he's not acting like an ordinary human being. But when he takes birth in Bengal as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then he's acting like a Brahmin, like an ordinary person. And he has really human dealings with his devotees. And there's so much intimate personal exchanges going on. Okay, but I'm not competent to describe. You can read in Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Okay. They have Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's association, so they're perhaps not feeling that separation.
But after he left, they didn't have it anymore. And they continued to, then they had to take full advantage of one another's association in the absence of Mahaprabhu. Mm-hmm. So you read about, Bhakti Ratnakara, about the devotees after Lord Chaitanya's disappearance, how they prized one another's association. How Narahari Chakravarti, okay, he was writing in the 18th century, but still he may not have seen the things for himself, but he was heard from people who had seen it. He heard from reliable sources, and he recorded how you can see his own descriptions of how glorious each of these great devotees was and how valuable their association was. Ketirigram is a great holy place because Narottam Das Thakur was born there. Krishna never performed any pastimes there. Yeah. But it's a sacred place because the devotee lived, was born and lived there. So that's how prized any connection with Krishna's devotees is, or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's devotees. Krishna never went there. There's no apparent connection with Krishna directly, but the connection is simply with the presence of his devotee there. So that Ketirigram is, you know, the most sacred of holy places, therefore. Well, to speak of actually meeting such a devotee, you know, just to touch the dust that he stood on is all purifying. Yeah. Anything else? Yeah.
Can a devotee in a different rasa from Madhurya rasa imbibe the same mood or intensity of the devotees, like the gopis?
No, if you're not in the same rasa, then you can't fully understand it. You can partly understand it. Not fully imbibe. You can partly imbibe.
Partly imbibe.
There's bhakti rasa. That's the direct experience. To experience direct bhakti rasa, you have to be in the rasa. But there's kavya rasa also. The taste of poetry. So transcendental poetry is such that you don't have to be in the rasa to get the benefit of the poetry describing the rasa. We read Bhagavatam or read some poetry composed by a great devotee, you know, play by Rupa Goswami or a poem by Kavi Karnapur. In that poetry, intimate pastimes of Krishna with his devotees is being described, and much of it is not our own rasa. Maybe I haven't realized any rasa, maybe I'm just a neophyte. But by the mercy of the poet, I'm able to imbibe, I'm able to relish somebody else's rasa. So that's called kavya rasa, where it's what we call vicarious. That means it's not your own experience, you're watching or witnessing someone else's experience. But you can taste the rasa secondhand through poetry. That the Shastra provides that, at least the poetical Shastra. And Bhagavatam is kavya. You know, it's Vedic, it's Puranic, and it's also kavya. So in the Bhagavatam, from the Bhagavatam, we can imbibe all the rasas, even the ones that are not our own rasa. But it's just a partial experience. You know, it's not. We don't actually enter somebody else's rasa, but we can taste it. So all the devotees are relishing the descriptions of the loving dealings of Krishna and the gopis, even the ones who can't directly enter. That's Uddhava's position. He's the best relisher and the best describer, but he is not himself in the Madhurya Rasa. No, he's in his rasa. To do that, he'd have to give up his own rasa. He has his relationship with Krishna, and he can't give that up. You know, who's going to be Uddhava if he gives up his job? Yeah? Who's going to do his service? So he has to do his service. He can't give it up. And therefore he can't become a gopi.
I'm saying this because I heard in a 12 or 30 years ago seminar on nectar of devotion.
Yes.
And the Mahakrishna Goswami was mentioning Prabhupada saying that certain individual souls can attain higher rasa, even though mostly are satisfied in their rasa, they can aspire for a higher rasa.
Yeah, I understand that to mean that someone who has not yet realized his actual rasa, he's only partially realized it. That means, you know, you've realized a lesser rasa as an intermediate stage. And you may be situated in that intermediate stage for some time, and finally you get a tickling sensation that you feel like you want something else, and you move on to your real rasa by gradual stages. That's the way I understand it. Not that you actually change your eternal rasa, but you haven't reached it yet, and therefore you feel dissatisfied with something less, and so you move on. That's like Gopi Kumar's,
right?
Yeah. But you don't read about Gopi Kumar becoming a gopi. Some devotees read to say, "Oh, what is this? You know, after all of this, a nice book, but you know, it only glorifies the cowherd boys." Well, whoever says that hasn't read this seventh chapter. We're reading it for 2 days. You know, okay, Gopi Kumar doesn't become a gopi, but we hear a lot about the gopis anyway. It's not that Sanatana Goswami is stopping at the cowherd boys. Anyway, we don't all have to become gopis. It'd be nice if we, it's like a sannyasi tells all the brahmacharis never get married. There's still 90% of them are going to get married. You preach the highest thing, but not to expect everyone's going to reach it. You know, we glorify that this is the greatest devotional service, but not everybody is going to participate directly in it.
Shooting for the moon.
Yeah.
You shoot for the moon.
Yes.
And then that way you get the highest.
Yeah, then everybody achieves his own highest potential.
But Mahaprabhu's pastimes, it seems different because Jagai and Madai.
Yes. Yes.
Right. But then here another breakdown was Jagai and Madai. They were elevated to Goloka Vrindavan.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't.
So
I don't know if that actually involved a change of Swarup. And Krishna can do anything. Yeah. I've got a philosophical idea in my head that Swarup is fixed, you know, but maybe I'm wrong. Or Krishna can contradict that if he wants. Yeah. Anyway, I can't pretend to be an expert on these things. What we have is Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu. Through the eyes of Shastra, we're able to meet these devotees like Uddhava. Yeah. Thanks to the description of Srimad Bhagavatam and Sanatana Goswami's Brihad Bhagavatam, we're getting some idea of what kind of person this is. Without that help, we'd be in trouble. Yeah. We had to make up our own idea of Uddhava, or just sit down and try to meditate and, you know, come in contact with Uddhava, you know, call him up, we'll have a channeling session and we'll call up the ghost of Uddhava. It doesn't work like that. Now, there are standard procedures, and especially the faithful study of the Bhagavatam and related shastras, following the commentaries of our, you know, self-realized acharyas. This is how we get to actually meet these devotees. This is the standard process. Now, whatever little we understand through Prabhupada's purports and the writings of the Goswamis. Okay, so I think we'll stop for today. Then homework. I already suggested that you jump ahead, and I don't know if you have already read chapter 11, the section from several chapters of Canto 11. That's good. If you haven't, read that. I would suggest there are two more days. On the last day, we're going to look at the Bhagavat Mahatmya from the Skanda Purana. This is four chapters long. It's about, I don't know, 250 verses. So rather than have to cram it all in one night, you might start reading that tonight. Okay, but we'll discuss that, those four chapters, on the last day.
But how long would it take to read Bhagavad
Gita? I don't know, 2 hours?
Six.
Yeah, there's no commentary, it's just verses.
That's from 11:30.
11:30, okay. Yeah, but we're not going to read it in the class. You have to read it at home. Okay? You didn't read it. How much of it did you read?